So this is a bit historic. So you guys, we're counting on you for a wild service. We have cool things happening from start to finish. Thank you for joining us. Whether you've been here for 6 years or today is your first time, we're really excited that you joined us. We are going to start off with some outstanding music. So join me, please stand, and we're going to sing my favorite Christmas song of all time. So get ready. Thanks for coming. We want to make sure your calendars are lined up for next weekend through the 11th of January. Real quickly, next Sunday is Dedication Sunday. We're going to dedicate our very new, beautiful, gorgeous, fantastic, fun building. Yes, it is, it's sensational. It's huge, and it's cool, it's fun, it's going to be worth it. Please get there. 9:15 and 11 a.m., two services. We're going from 3 to 2. Do not come here. We won't be here. We won't even put signs on the door. So some people might be confused. Maybe we'll put signs on the door. But anyway, we will be over at the new building. It's just a mile and a half to 2 miles, somewhere in between there. Close to wall-to-wall, the Mason Post Office, that kind of thing. Go down Tylersville. Head south on Reading Road. Secondly, we're going to have on the 4th our first service in the new building. That's more normal, what we regularly do. And on the 11th, we're going to have a grand opening service. So that's the one to just pull out all the stops and invite everybody you got. We would love to have a full house that day on the 11th of January. So very cool things. Also, you notice it's crazy in the atrium because there's so much happening. We have our last day of Angel Tree Returns. So this is important. If you have your gifts in the car and you haven't brought them in, or even if you got them at home, it's going to be tough. But we need to get those gifts because there's a kid waiting for them. We go in, for those of you who don't know what Angel Tree is, we go and we buy a gift on behalf of the parents who might be incarcerated this holiday season. We know that they love their kids, and we want to step in the gap for them and give them something to celebrate. Let them know that their parents, even though they're away, they care about them. So the important thing is make sure you get all your gifts today because we're going to transfer them over to the new building. There's nothing at the White House and nothing here anymore. So make sure you get your Angel Tree gifts in right after this service. And then finally, we are going to have Christmas Eve. It's always a big deal in Mason. We're going to have it at 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock in the new building. So 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, Christmas Eve, whatever that is that next Tuesday? Something like that. A week from Tuesday. Make sure that you're there. You can invite all your friends and relatives, neighbors, that kind of thing for that event. So with that, let's go ahead and get ready to take up an offering. This will be our last offering. So be generous. No, I'm just kidding. We really do have the chance to do some amazing things with the funds that we have. Together, we know that we can change the world, and we mean that really seriously because we got 18,000 people across 5 campuses. It's an amazing opportunity to do amazing stuff for God. So we're going to take up an offering now, pool our resources, and let's prepare ourselves by saying this prayer together. Join me as I read this. God, in the busyness of this season, help me to be present, thankful, and open-handed. There is nothing I have that you have not given me. Help me to fill up on the blessings of my life and pour them out for those around me in generosity. All I have and am belongs to you, a lavish and loving Father. Thank you for all you give us. In your name and in your example we pray, Jesus. Amen. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're going to pay attention to some very, very important people that really need their own video to celebrate them. Let's give a look.
Today, I want to celebrate the amazing things that are going on at Mason, particularly the amazing service and giving up yourself for the team. It has been 6+ years and we could not host our friends and make this place feel like home if we didn't change what this kind of average looking school looks like.
I get here at 5 a.m.
About 6:05 most days.
I get here about 5:30 in the morning.
We've got 4 storage containers in the back. We move everything in and out of there every week.
So I usually hang signs after we get everything moved out of the front.
Setting up the computers and getting Kids Club ready to roll.
And brew a lot of coffee.
I can't believe what a great team we have.
Very service oriented, just all about pitching in and helping out.
Definitely a team effort.
guys are tight, joke around, have fun with it, but everybody knows that we got a job to do and we're up against the hard deadline.
Setting up each room, getting the kids' rooms ready, getting the warm furniture, the coffee, everything, all because of people laying down their life.
We're doing something above and beyond.
You're playing a little part and maybe bringing that one person closer to God that might come through the door.
You know, it's ministry outside of just setting up the rooms.
It's a wonderful thing.
It's a great central location to draw people from the Westchester area, Liberty Township, as well as, you know, Kings Mills, Loveland, that sort of area.
You know, as soon as you have your own building, then more people come and more people stay.
So to finally be able to invite friends and bring family into a building that is Crossroads will be really cool.
Invite them into a place that shows excellence, that shows a beautiful building. That's the way that we want to present Jesus to people, that he loves us so much and he gave us a great facility to invite them into.
I can't imagine getting up every Sunday and 5, 6 a.m. to come do this for 6 years. I just want to see them in their new building because they've been working so hard for so long. And finally can see that light at the end of the tunnel. I think it's great.
We'll just have to figure out something else to do in the morning, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, you'll probably see us in the parking lot.
I love the end of that. We'll just have to figure out something else to do, like parking. It is an amazing honor to be in the presence of those people who've not only come at 5 in the morning and gotten our place ready for us, but the people who tear that down and honor the commitment we have with the school. Let's turn the lights up a little bit. I am sure there are some teardown people in here. Would you please stand? We are going to honor you properly. Let's give these people an amazing thank you. Come on, stand up. Come on. There's more than that. They just don't like getting applause. They are the thanked least people, and yet they've done the most and sacrificed the most, so thank you. We are celebrating what has happened in this place because about 8 years ago, Brian Tome, our senior pastor, had an idea about we need to grow in a way that's different than just building a bigger Oakley. And I don't know what it looks like, but we're going to have to try multi-site. And today what we're looking at is this series called Awaited Behind the Scenes. We're looking how the impact of this one baby has changed everything for so many audiences. And so we're looking at all the different characters in this scene, whether it's shepherds, whether it's the wise men, et cetera, et cetera. We are looking at how this baby has impacted us. And today I want to focus on that lineage. I want to focus on the history. Last week, Brian Tome said that we're going to be grafted into the family tree. We are part of this new family tree, and it has implications that are profound. Today, we're going to look at that because we're looking back at the Mason campus because this is our last service, and we want to look at why it's so different, what things have meant the most. So we're going to enjoy that. Join me in just praying for the rest of our time before we get started. God, thanks that you have brought us to this place, that in 6 years we've grown tremendously, but more importantly, we've grown to be more like you. God, thanks for inviting us into this journey, and for everyone from whether you're not sure you believe yet to people who've been following you for a long time, God, we just say thanks for getting us to this place, and thanks for giving us an even bigger and cooler house so that we can include more folks. Be with us the rest of the time as we try to consider your word, what the implications for us are. Pray this in the name of your Son, the one who changed everything. Amen. So we're looking at the lineage of Jesus to kick this off, and it's an incredible lineage. It's accounted for in two of the different four Gospels, the biographies of Jesus. And the one I want to look at today first is the Gospel of, just got 10,000 steps, just right there, just there. The one I want to look at first is Matthew. Matthew is the first book of the New Testament, and the cool thing is, Matthew says, before I start telling about this guy, let me tell you about his lineage. Let me tell you about his family tree, because it has implications for every one of you. And I want to look at that first, looking in chapter 1, verses 1 through 17. I left out a few names because, frankly, it's a really long list, and I don't know how to pronounce all of them well. So we're just going to blast through and kind of focus on the majors. Jesus Christ came from the family of King David and also the family of Abraham. And this is a list of his ancestors from Abraham to King David. His ancestors were Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, and his brothers. Judah's sons were Perez and Zerah, and their mother was Tamar. Hezron, Ram, Amminadab, Nahshon, Salmon, Boaz, his mother was Rahab, Obed, his mother was Ruth, Jesse, and King David. From David to the time of exile in Babylonia, the ancestors of Jesus were David, Solomon, his mother had been Uriah's wife, Rehoboam, Abijah, Asa, Jehoshaphat, and Jehoiakim, and Joseph, the husband of Mary, the mother of Jesus, who was called the Messiah. And interestingly, there were 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile in Babylon, and 14 more to the birth of the Messiah. And I believe that as we're taking this journey, we need to consider why Matthew started with this unusual depiction of where Jesus came from before he even told what Jesus did. I think there's two very important reasons. The first is that this is a meticulous order that he very intentionally called every name out on. There were 14 generations from Abraham, the one who every Jew recognizes as the father of their lineage, to David, who was the one everyone wanted to return, basically. They wanted a king like David who had might and power and influence and wealth. And then from David to the exile, when clearly God had said, you guys aren't quite getting what I'm here for. You aren't really honoring me. You're not really living your lives as though you're seeking me. And then down to Jesus. 14, 14, 14. Meticulous, precision, exact. I think Matthew's saying, folks, listen, if there's one thing you got to hear, this is the God of our forefathers, and he has somehow uniquely brought this baby into the world, and this baby changes everything. The unbelievable thing is that he cites the craziest birth order you could imagine. Now, he gives this great heritage of the Abrahams and the Davids, but then he calls out some peculiar scandals. If you look at the parentheses, they showcase four women who were nothing short of scandalous. Now, one of the things is you never really accounted for the women. They didn't really get the attention that women deserved. So the fact that he calls them out and puts them in Jesus' lineage means we should pay attention and say, what do we have to learn about this? So he gives all these great names, and then he calls out, the first one is the mother, Tamar. Tamar, interestingly, was a daughter-in-law of Judah. And Judah set her up basically with his first son, named there, who was Perez. She unbelievably was not able to conceive, and he was kind of an evil guy. God takes him out, puts his next brother in line to father and bring the heritage and lineage to continue. Unfortunately, he didn't want his lineage to go through Tamar. He wanted it to go through a wife of his own pick. So God takes him out. And unbelievably, she then poses as a prostitute at the city gate. And when Judah is coming to the city, he sees her, and his wife had already died, and he says, I'd like to have a covenant with you. So she unbelievably births and continues the lineage through the father, Judah. Why would Matthew include Tamar? If he's trying to make this thing impressive, why on earth would he cite Tamar? Then let's look at the next parentheses. His mother was Rahab. Okay, so Boaz's mom was a full-fledged prostitute. She's the one who was hiding spies for Israel so that they could conquer and take a territory. Another prostitute? What's the point? Matthew, what's the deal? Why are you putting these women and highlighting them in how Jesus got here? As we continue, you see Ruth. She wasn't quite as bad, but she threw herself, basically, slept in a guy's bedroom because she was widowed and needed someone to take care of her and her mother-in-law. So she goes into a guy's bedroom. Why would you call out Ruth? And then finally, they don't even use Bathsheba's name. They instead refer to her as the wife. Let's flip the slide if we could. Yeah, his mother had been Uriah's wife. We've all heard the story of David and Bathsheba, but if you haven't, it's a crazy story. David decides not to go to war. He sends his people out, but he doesn't actually go down there. He's instead back. He's sitting on his roof, and he looks down, and he sees this gorgeous woman who's taking a bath, gets naked, and so on, and he says, I have to have her. And with that, he sends her husband to the front lines. He gets killed, and he takes her as one of his wives. This is David, the one that everybody heralded as the man after God's heart. And his wife, Bathsheba, doesn't even get mentioned by name, but she gets called out. Why would Matthew list these four women? And then of all things, he points to Mary, the one who gets pregnant with God's son before she gets married to Joseph. It's an incredible lineage. I believe it's really powerful to say one thing to us. Everyone's included. This baby came to turn everything upside down. The way that you've been trying to follow me is not winning. You can't earn my favor. You can't reach high enough. You can't possibly put yourself out of the mix strongly enough. It's not you going to me, it's me going to you. You can't come to me. I, through my son Jesus, am going to come and pierce through the darkness and grab your hand. Through this boy, all the rules have changed. And so I'm telling you, all five women that I'm mentioning in my lineage, they're all scandalous. Because I want you that much to know that it doesn't matter what your background is, what your story is, how hard you've run from me, how much you're hiding from me. It doesn't matter if you've had some weird sexual things or some weird financial things. It doesn't matter. This baby changes everything. Matthew, before he tells you anything about Jesus, he tells you that this story is enough for you to know that God is sovereign, God is specific, God is finitely, specifically, intentionally crafting this crazy birth order to let us know that he came for every single one of us. And so being grafted into this family tree means we need to know that there's nothing that's going to stand in the way of him reaching for us. I know that when I pick myself, when I'm selfish, when I do stupid stuff at home, when I do stupid stuff at work, when I do stupid stuff, period, I'm embarrassed. When I pick myself, sin is basically selfishness. It's when we choose ourselves, try to take care of ourselves, satisfy ourselves, do anything to make ourselves feel better, control. And when I do that, I'm running away from God's best. And I say, I've got to get away from you. In fact, I don't want to see God. I don't want to hear God when I know that I'm running away from him, when I know that there's something separating us. So I run as hard as I can into darkness. And the amazing thing is that he's sitting there waiting with his arms open wide. He goes into my darkness, and he's ready for me. That's the message of Christmas. That's the invitation that Matthew says. Whatever you read, there's one thing you got to know. It's for you. He's flipped up this whole world. One of my bad areas is believing that I need to take my finances into my own hands. So it's been attention getting over the last couple months because year-end giving is important, not only here at Crossroads, but some of the other organizations we support. And we're trying to give outrageously and generously and not think twice. And I know that every time I squeeze harder because I'm worried about not having enough, I get worried. But I know that every time I open my hands, somehow freedom comes. This couldn't be more true than during this season when, of all things, we're trying to be generous, we're trying to do all these things, make sure that we have a fun Christmas, get our kids some nice stuff, etc., etc., and one of our cars goes down. And it's in not medium, because it was an awful repair. Thousands of dollars. I'm sitting there going, really, God? Come on. Of all the times. Right now? And so somehow, my wife and I were talking about how much to give, and we had that giving thing with the We Are, and we're just like, we're going to keep our heads down, we're just going to give, and somehow God's going to take care of it. And actually, that's true. A friend of the family ended up taking care of our car in a way that we could never have done. We didn't know that. We didn't ask for help. It's a situation that you just don't understand. And I sit there and go, God, why do I worry all the time? Why do I try to take matters into my own hands? In fact, one of the things that we're talking about is selling our house. Now, our house was, bought basically before I got into ministry. It's a nice big old house. It's actually quite fabulous, in my opinion. Best house I could ever imagine living in, but it's too much house. Lori's got a really, really bad back. It's too large. She can't really take care of it the way she wants to. I am sitting here looking at the property taxes, which are immense, and keeping it up and that kind of thing, and I'm sitting here going, oh my goodness, we should just move. See, I've got a son named Sam. He's living out in New York. He's engaged to a wonderful daughter-in-law that I'm about to welcome to the family named Taylor. My middle son is at Ohio State. He's going to graduate this year. And my daughter is Bethany. She is our youngest. She's a senior in high school. So we're looking at this going, well, Taylor's going to move. You know, Ben's already in college. He's gone. And Bethany's going to move. It makes all the sense in the world to downsize. So I sprung it this last Thanksgiving, telling the kids, hey, we're going to move soon. Lori's like, not that soon. We've got the wedding, we got two graduations, whatever. I'm saying, yeah, but I just want you guys to kind of get used to it. So, you know, in the middle of Thanksgiving, where all they wanted to do was park, sit back, enjoy, eat food, have a great time, watch football, play games. Here they are playing in the hearth room, having a great time. And I'm sitting here going, guys, we're going to move one of these. And they're like, wait, what? What are you talking about? It can't matter. There's never enough dollars. There aren't enough dollars to buy this house, Dad. This is the most valuable house in the neighborhood. And I'm like, really? It's not really the most valuable. We're on the lower side. It's a great neighborhood. And I'm sitting here going, why is it that they are so serious about not selling our house? Why was this something that kind of surprised them and took us off gear? I started thinking about it, you know, and I'm going, you know, it's a beautiful house. It's actually really attractive. It's got great, colors, and it's got lots and lots of rooms. There's multiple purpose rooms. There's great flexibility, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm still sitting there going, you know, it's just a house. Well, there's a big difference between what is seen and what is unseen. And the important thing that I started thinking about was it's not what is seen. It's not that they each have their rooms and they each have all the space they need and so on and so forth. It's the unseen. All the things that matter to them happened inside this house. Their stories have been written in this house. And they're saying, wait, our chapters aren't done. Don't finish the book here. We need a little more time before you close the book. And you know, folks, you guys are my family here, and I feel the same way. I'm actually bittersweet about leaving this place. My car finds its way here very easily. There's something about the seen and the unseen in this place. You know, most of us have written our stories in the Crossroad Mason community here over the last 6 years. Maybe you're new here today, and I just want to say you need to know what's happened before you, because you're joining a family that is, or hopefully you're joining a family, that is just a sensational ride of family after family member coming and becoming part of this story. And so we want to talk about whose shoulders we're building on today. And so we have this little spread here of bookshelves with picture frames because we want to celebrate our family. And so we're going to talk about the different things that have moved from the seen to the unseen and how those things happen and who's involved in those. But before we get to each of those different stories, I want to talk a little bit more about the scene, because how we got into this building is nothing short of incredible. So we're sitting here with this thing that we're enjoying. Now, unfortunately, if you stick your hand underneath, you may feel some gum or something like that, because it's a school. But this school is one of three, I guess, maybe four properties across all of the Southwest Ohio region that have an auditorium of 750 people. It's a very, very special place. They also had bylaws that wouldn't allow us to come in here. So that's part of our story as well. And so as we start thinking about this place, one of the things we need to cherish is how we even got our 6 years in here. And two very important people stepped up out of a group of 40 that was meeting at Allison and John Brazzi's house and Brad and Colleen Johansson's house. We met for about 2 years looking for a property. We were searching all over. In fact, out of the 35 or 40 people that met, there was a team that was dedicated just to finding a property for us to meet at. And so for 2 years, we're sitting here going, come on, we need a place. And we were banging on Oakley's door saying, hey, you wanted to expand. We're ready. We're the right team, but we don't have a place to go. And then two members inside our family, Larry and Patsy Plum, who are uniquely connected. Here's their picture. We're going to put a frame up on them because they uniquely stepped forward with their connections, their relationships, their resources, and said, we're going to work even harder to get this Mason School. Now, the amazing thing is that Patsy is an architect, and she was actually designing and working for the architecture firm that built the other newer school buildings that were built. And she had relationship with the superintendent, the assistant superintendent so far, and so on. And Larry, he's just connected. He just knows everybody, in case you know Larry. And these two said, we're going to go on a limb, and we are going to push and call in every favor and get with every relationship that we can. And it turns out that a family who's near and dear to us now was actually led by the dad who was the president of the school board. And the school board president was actually listening and saying, this is crazy. We're going to have to rewrite the bylaws. How do we get that done? Well, of all things, we had someone inside the family, Scott Phillips. He's on this picture here. He's the guy on the left, in case you didn't know. And Scott is a zoning lawyer. Now, of all things, you know, you go to a party, hey, what do you do? Zoning lawyer. Now, that's just not sexy. I'm saying, it's just not a sexy profession. He texted me back. He went middle service. He said, it's a very sexy profession. All right. What is wrong with that? Anyway, my friend Scott said, I know how to do this stuff. This is what I do professionally. Let me partner with Larry and Patsy, and we will get this thing done. And based on all the relationships that we had, and people like Kevin Wise, the president of the school board, we were able to get the bylaws written just so we could come in here. Now, there's some things in the scene that we really like, things like knowing when we leave our house to get here on time. Most of you have that wrong still. By at least 5 to 7 minutes. So let's adjust our clocks as we move to the new building. Just give me 7 extra minutes, for goodness sakes. We know not only when to leave, but we know where to meet our friends. We know where to park. We know where we sit. Let's be candid. You guys sit in the same places, each other. Generally speaking, you sit in about the same sections every single service. Well, when we move, where are you going to park? Where are you going to meet your friends? Where are you going to sit in a 2,000-seat auditorium? They're all new rhythms, all new habits. It's a wonderful thing to think about. It's an invitation to say, hey, let's start some new relationships. Let's start talking to those people. Instead of just when Andy says, go shake somebody's hand, say hi, figure out who they are, you're actually going to need to meet those people because we're going to have a much bigger spot. It's wonderful. That's part of the scene. Another part of the scene that we won't miss is what happens on wrestling tournament weekends. I am so sorry, of all the weekends, they have another wrestling tournament. Apparently, the back parking lot is a total mess. I'm sorry. Everybody said we're going to have to start services late because it's so bad out there. Anyway, wrestling tournaments, we think we've had 700, but it's only like 22 wrestling tournaments. We've had plays like you wouldn't believe it. And the plays cause even more trouble because they mess up the sound, they mess up the stage, they mess up the sets. Everything gets thrown off kilter. We are not going to miss that. And in fact, we won't miss the Chinese New Year. Now, I'm not picking out any kind of a, we love our Chinese folks who are attending here, but for some reason, the Chinese New Year was a real curveball in something we thought was really important. You see, invitation is one of two things that we do well. And we have these kind of experiences that we can't wait to invite our friends and neighbors to. And one of those is Super Bowl. And I said, we're going to do Super Bowl year one. I don't care what it takes. I don't care what it costs. We're going to make that because it is part of our culture. It's part of our uniqueness. And it's the best darn thing that we do. It's a blast. And we're going to figure out how to do it remotely. And it caused a lot of attention, a lot of work, a lot of sweat and hurt. But we ended up picking the first Super Bowl weekend. Now, one thing we weren't completely sure on was how quickly we were going to be able to convert the space because the Chinese New Year had rented the facility up until 4 o'clock. And we knew that the night before we were going to have to do an amazing amount of setup. I mean, look at the work that's involved. All of that structure took enormous amounts of time. We've got our little floatable, whatever that is, Zephyr, whatever. We had unbelievable things planned. We actually got these little cute helmets to do the appetizers in and stuff like that. Super Bowl, a big deal. And I said, we're going to do it better than Oakley. We're going to have unbelievable apps. We're going to have a blast. We're going to have screens all over the place. We're going to kick tail. Well, the Chinese New Year was great, and we were happy that they were in the place until it got to be 4 o'clock and they weren't leaving. Then we found out they were going to leave at 6 o'clock and they weren't leaving. Then I had to act like the bouncer because we had an agreement with the school. I'm going, could you please just move your party to a different part of the school? We have to do this thing. It was a little bit awkward and all that stuff. So we're sitting there going, oh, this is terribly awkward. You don't want a church to act like they got to push a different group out of the school. But we're dying to have it. And if you've ever taken a push broom and tried to push rice, I am telling you, I thought I was in a science experiment with a little, you know, picking up a larvae each time. There were thousands of rice grains that had puffed and been cooked, and they were all over, and you couldn't get them up. It was a nightmare. We're not going to miss things where there's competition for our space. We aren't. However, there's some unbelievably funny things as well. There's things like the frozen experience we had last year. And this is not a cartoon movie either. We had 6 weeks, get ready for this, 6 weeks where we had no heat in the auditorium. So it was bad. I mean, it was bad. It was 6 weeks. After 3 weeks, I called up Mike, the assistant superintendent, said, please, can you do anything? Can you get fans to come in? Our people are freezing. It's the third week now. They had to order a special part because the furnace wasn't whatever, and it was just a big mess. Well, when I looked over, and I usually sit down here, when I looked over across the aisle, my friend Dawn Satterwhite was sitting there, and she had a scarf that was virtually above her nose. I'm like, this is not a Muslim. This is a Christian church. She was covered. Almost every square inch of her face was covered because it was so cold. We're not going to miss that. Although I am telling you that it is freezing in the new building. It's going to be cold. Keep your coats. It is an unbelievable thing that we've contended. We also aren't going to have to contend with Bat Day. Anybody remember Bat Day? All right, this is not a Cincinnati Red event. This is the actual bat from Batman, right? I'm thinking, okay, I get in at 6:45 most Sunday mornings. This is before we had three services, and we're meeting together. And in the back, I get Rob and Todd, two guys who are on staff, and they hit me up and they go, "We're not going to be able to do services today." I'm like, "Wait, what are you talking about?" No, there's a bat in the auditorium. We can't have services. Like, you got to be kidding me. I saw Manu Ginobili, a San Antonio Spur, knock one out of thin air right on an NBA center court. And I'm like, no problem with the bat. Well, Rob, he had a good reason for objecting. He worked on a cruise ship for a number of years. And he was like, we had to get people into their rooms, and then we'd get to port, and we'd get everybody off the boat until we tracked the bat down. It was a big deal. You can't let anybody get hit with rabies. It's a big deal. I'm like, rabies? Should I think differently about this? I'm thinking it's I'll just take a broom and swat the thing down and whatever. And so, it's a flying mouse, for goodness sakes. And then Todd, our first impressions director, Todd says, no, seriously, I think we may need to cancel service. He goes, don't portray me like a weenie. I was like, okay, you just wanted to get off a Sunday, and you're thinking, let's use the bat as an excuse and send people home. Whatever the case, we are not going to have a bat. But I really was pretty okay about it until all of a sudden I thought somebody had bought one of these things, because it was like the bat. We had rear projection when we do our video service, when we get a service from Oakley, and our screen comes down in the middle, and it looked, seriously, the bat got alive somehow in the first service. The projector was behind it. It looked like we were Gotham City. I am telling you, it looked right, and people were like, whoa! They just all screamed. And then in second service, it was even better. It had somehow made its way back to the back of the auditorium, and it came over the top of the middle section, and it raised the whole crowd. People were like, ah! So we are not going to have any bat days in the new building, we think. But we do have 5 garage doors, which are very cool, that we did for design. So we're going to open those up and actually have it be open air. So there may be some birds, but we're going to try to keep them out. But anyway, it is going to be a different experience altogether. But there's a really critical thing that we need to say the unseen is what has really defined us. It is what really has been behind our story. The unseen has been spectacular. And the first thing is, just to highlight for those of you who don't know, we do two things. And we say we're going to do them well. And the first one is invite. We want to connect people to a community of growing Christ followers, people who are after God, trying to figure out how he applies and changes their lives. So this invitation thing is big. So I'm sitting here about a month ago in the men's restroom and go, yes, men do talk in the restroom, just FYI. So I'm sitting in the restroom and I'm going, and my buddy is coming in. His name is Kevin Prowse, and Kevin Prowse has a picture as well, because Kevin is sitting there and I'm asking, Kevin, tell me how you got here. And he says, oh man, now he's a landscaper. You can tell he's got a great complexion and whatever. And Kevin says, you wouldn't believe it, but you know, I've had a rough gig. And I had some addictions that I was trying to break, and a friend of mine invited me. It was Randy and Cindy, and they included me, and I'm forever changed. I got to tell you, forever changed, because they took a chance and they invited me. I said, tell me about your first experience. He says, I don't know, I went in there, and I don't know what I was expecting, but he said something like, you know, you talk about the higher power thing, you need to meet God. And so he invited me, and I'm sitting down there, and all of a sudden, they're playing the music, and it's great music. It's loud, and it's fun, and I'm sitting there. All of a sudden, I look down, and my foot, I couldn't stop it. My foot was tapping. I was going crazy, and I said, I'm having a good time. It's freaking church. What in the world? And he said, I love this place. And all of a sudden, Brian got up there, and he started speaking, and it was especially designed for me to hear that Sunday. And I hear that over and over and over again from our folks in the family. God was talking to me that day. And somehow I started bawling the rest of the service. And the next week I came back and I started bawling. And the next week I came back. And it was like week after week, the message was meant just for me. And my life changed. So I started inviting. I said, who have you invited? He goes, well, the first guy is Bob Rowland, who's your new facilities manager at the new facility. I said, that's fantastic. I love the legacy, the family tree thing, because everyone we invite has a chance to shoot to someone else. And Kevin knew this, and he did this. I said, who have you invited in the last year? He said, oh, I've invited my sister and her husband. I've invited Trish and Tony. And he started prattling off some names. I couldn't even catch them all. And then I said, well, I'm going to follow up with Bob Rowland, see if you really invited him. So I asked Bob, who invited you? He goes, Kevin Prowse. I said, oh, good, the story checks out. So I go, well, tell me, Bob, what happened? He goes, I was going through some tough stuff. Kevin invited me, said, this is the place you got to come. Changed my life. I started inviting everybody. I said, who have you invited? And he prattled off 18 names just like that. I'm trying to count them. I said, could you do that again? I was like, send me those names. And he sent me the list of just the 18. And he says, sends me another email. He says, oh, and Gorman. I said, who's Gorman, and why are you taking a whole email just to tell me you invited Gorman? He said, it was a crazy story. He was in England, and he was going through some bad stuff, and I told him, man, you need to come to our church. That might be the farthest invitation that actually occurred. So somehow, it's contagious. The family knows that when we have new life, we have to give it away. And so invitation has changed everything. We've gone into this with open hands and said, God, we're yours. We want to give away what you've done. So the interesting thing is when we started out from 500, we were about 600, and we dipped down to about 450. We were about that 500 level, and we changed from just being convenient to making this home, to making this a place that people wanted to belong to making a place where belonging to this meant that you belonged to something much bigger than yourself. And all of a sudden, things started changing. And importantly, all of our communities started changing once we got multi-site right up Mason, because we were just the first of four more sites. And now we pre-multi-site, we're at 8,900 for all of Crossroads right before we started. Now we're over 17,700 across a four-week period in November, because family wants to add brothers and sisters. That's number one. Number two is we want to grow. We want to have life work better. And so there's different things that we can go through. One of the things we can do is we can actually say we're in. One of the ways we do that is by baptisms. Now, we do baptisms only 2, 3, 4 times a year, and they're kind of special occasions, and we put them in. Usually there's one sometime in fall. Usually there's one sometime around Easter and so on, one in the summer. But when we do them, we get incredible responses. We baptize over 250 to 300 people. We can't quite calculate because we weren't keeping track early on. But one of the stories that means the most to me is my daughter. She was the only one in my family who hadn't yet been baptized, and she came and said, "Yeah, I'd like to get baptized, Dad. Can we do it?" Well, we had a trough. It was literally a metal trough that we put people in when we first started. And I said, "Absolutely, we'll get you in." And so she became one of the first people to get baptized here. Now, the cool thing about her story is that she invited her sixth grade teacher, Lindsay. And she said, "Dad, can I invite my teacher? I don't know, it's a little bit awkward, but I'd really like her to be there." And we said, "Absolutely." So she invited Lindsay, and Lindsay, it turns out, had never been baptized. So Lindsay actually did a video for us that we set across all, it was at that time just Oakley and Mason, but we did Lindsay's video about getting baptized. And then we ran it again when we had Florence because it's such a powerful video. And the coolest thing is that now as Lindsay and Joe, the couple, had offspring, Parker and Cooper, they've dedicated their kids. So it's this lineage in the family tree that goes from one person to the next. And here you have one of my favorite moments in our church's history. There's Joe off to the right, Parker, then Cooper, the little sweet head in the middle, and then Lindsay and I. And we as a community got a chance to celebrate a family that is going multi-generation because my daughter took a chance, Lindsay took a chance, and now this family is dedicating and saying, "We want all in." It's one of the ways we grow. We also grow through community groups. In our spiritual growth area, we have these unbelievable opportunities to be subject-led and pursue and find out amazing things about how we can grow. Over the years, we've offered 80 different classes, and the crazy number is somewhere around 1,400 people have gone into these classes. 1,400 people changed because they're growing, because they're taking time to apply what we're doing here in their lives. Now, two of the people that I want to uniquely celebrate here also are John and Danita Brewer. Yeah, sure. Give it up. John and Danita are two of the most wonderful people that you will come to meet. These two people said, "We're going to take all the material that we have and we're going to pool it together about marriages." And they started something called Real Marriage. And this ministry is alive and kicking. They've recruited a bunch of different families to help lead. We have, as a result of their effort, 250 people who've gone through, whether their marriages were thriving or just barely surviving, their lives are changed because John and Danita, part of our family, said, "We want to take what we've been given and give it away." That's how this, yeah, absolutely. That is how this family works. And lastly, I just want to call out the weddings. Now, one of the ideas I had was, if you've been baptized in here, stand up. If you've had a baby dedicated, if you've had a baby, if you've had whatever, I just wanted to acknowledge all those people, just like we did the setup and teardown people, but it would just be too much time and a mess. So what I wanted to do was say the statistic of what's happened here. We've married about 30-plus couples in the last 5 years, but we can't communicate enough unless we give you a story. Well, the most recent wedding we did in the Mason community is one of my favorites. It's about a couple named Chris and Amanda. And Christopher and Amanda went through the pre-married in Oakley, and they were ready. They said, "Yes, we're going to get engaged." They got engaged. They were engaged almost 2 years, and they were living together. And they knew that that wasn't God's best. They said, "You know, we're just doing that for money," a common reason about why people try to live together before they get married. And they said, "We just don't want to do this anymore." And they were meeting with one of the guys that mentors them, and he said, "Hey, dude, it's time." As the mentor was talking to Christopher, he said, "It's time. You either need to do it or get off the pot." And Chris said, "Yeah, I do." And so he was resolved, after having a conversation with another two Oakley, Crossroads people, he was resolved to getting married. And he, with determination, gets in the car. He's about to head out and talk to Amanda. And it turns out Amanda had sent some kind of an email that said, "We need to talk about getting married." That's just the way God works. It's the way God works. So he said, "Hey, can we get married in the next 24 hours? We're like, "Okay, we don't know how that's going to happen, but I've got a window at, you know, whatever it was." So what ended up happening was we couldn't pull it off that afternoon, but we scheduled it for middle of the next day at noon. And so we had a staff meeting for the Mason staff, we ended up having all of our staff be the witnesses. And Andy Ryder was generous enough to come up with a couple songs. He's sitting there strumming his guitar as they walked in. It was beautiful. Guess where they did it? The White House garage. The White House garage. Christopher and Amanda Glover. Absolutely awesome. There they are. As I say, you may kiss your bride. In the span of 20 hours, we ended up getting this couple together because it was God's best. And so here we sit as a family, ready to go into a new building. And the question is, how are we going to get ready for this new building? We've been working like crazy, 60, 70-hour weeks. People are going nuts just trying to prepare this new house. The only reason we're moving there is because we need space. We need space for our new family. So before we get there, I want to kind of mark the door with how high we are by taking a family picture, all right? So I'm going to put the lights on, if you will, and go ahead and stand up. I'm serious. Get up. All right, now, it's very important that you put your best smiles on. I am going to do my best to capture this, and Matt said to make sure that I have the thing off, so the flash off. So are you ready? I want you to say cheese on three. One, two, three.
Cheese.
That was really anemic. I am not happy at all. I want a very, very much better effort at that, okay? Everybody ready? One, two, three, cheese. All right, that was good. Now, I want everybody to do crazy. Do whatever you want. Hands in the air. Just go nuts. This is our crazy family picture. All right, come on. Come on. All right, well done. One more? Yeah, all right. Excellent. That is our family picture. Well done. So as we close this thing, there's two very important things I want to call out. None of us would be here if it wasn't for Christmas. That as you go through, Andy was talking during our music time. He was talking about hearing familiar Christmas songs and just going through the motions. We don't want to do that. And the same thing is true with thinking about Christmas. This baby pierced the earth to flip the scales upside down. It's nothing that we can do. It's nothing about us reaching up to God. It's about God reaching to us. So I've got two things for everyone to do. The first one is we're going to give you these wonderful mailers. We're going to send them out to 85,000, but 90% of us are here because we ended up having... Yeah, check it out. It's not your grandmother's church. But bring her anyway. We're sending out 85,000 of these, but 90% of us are here because someone asked us to come. We did that little survey with the clickers about 5-6 months ago. 90% of us are here because somebody cared enough to ask us. So I want you to take these things as you're going out, grab a few, and then I want you to do a prayer walk. All right? I'm not talking about going ringing on people's doors like those cult things and whatever else. I'm talking about you and your spouse or you and your friends, or if you're by yourself, just walk the streets and then just ask God, do you want me to get in a conversation with these people? Here's what I know about them. I just want these people to come to know you. Whoever it is, I want you to walk your neighborhood streets and just think about who it is. Think of at your job as you go to the water cooler or whatever other kind of job you have, if you're in a classroom or whatever, if you're a student, if you're... Just think about who it is that God would say, hey, I want them in the family. The second thing is, we're going to give you a gift today, and it's actually really nice. It's a mason jar for Mason, right? Sweet. Yeah, check this thing out. We've got it, and it has the Crossroads logo on there, and it says Mason, established 2008. And what I'd love for you guys to do is to take this and put it in the middle of your table, whether you're a family, whether you're single, and you got your friends over, whatever it is, and I want you to just think every time you're at the table, who am I going to pray for? And just drop those names into the mason jar. Of course, you can drink with it, but I'm also encouraging you to use it as an opportunity to think about praying for people to come into the family, because that's who we are. That's whose shoulders you're coming on. So I'm going to invite the band out now, and give you a blessing as we prepare this very, very final song for the Mason community in this building. God, thank you for what you have invited us to. I bless these people in your name, that we would be bold, that you would surface conversations, that we would put names in this jar, that we would walk our neighborhoods and we would hear from you who we need to just invite. And God, maybe we're not even sure about where we are in our belief yet, but we know that this place is a place that's safe and that we can find it out. And God, we even ask that we, if we don't know you, bring other friends who don't know so that we can talk about it. And God, we ask that more than anything, you just bring your kids to this new building because we've got the space now. Bless this team. Bless this family as we graft into your family tree. In the precious name of your Son who changed all the rules. Amen. Please stand up and join with me as we sing one final song. Sing with every ounce you are. We're going to sing my favorite Christmas song, O Come All You Faithful.
Oh,
Sorry for going a little bit late, but it's our very last service. Thanks for being here. We will see you at the new building, 91511. Make sure you get your mason jars. Love you guys. See ya.